Today on the 21st show, the campaign to be the next U.S. Senator from Illinois after Dick Durbin's decision not to seek re-election. Next up in our series, Republican Jeannie Evans. She grew up in the Los Angeles area and now works in Chicago as an antitrust enforcement lawyer. We'll talk with her about domestic policy, foreign affairs, and politics under President Donald Trump. We also want to put your questions to the candidate. You can call us throughout the hour at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. I'm Brian Mackey with Jeannie Evans for the hour today on the 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL Urbana, WUIS Springfield, WNIJ Rockford DeKalb, WVIK Quad Cities, and WSIU Carbondale. But first, news. From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And today we have another conversation in our series with candidates in the primary elections for U.S. Senate. But first, I want to note the death today of Illinois-based civil rights leader Jesse Jackson. Born in South Carolina, Reverend Jackson worked with Martin Luther King Jr. during the civil rights movement. Indeed, he was among the men present on the balcony at the Lorraine Motel when King was assassinated. Jackson sought to continue King's legacy, ultimately running for president in 1984. He lost the Democratic Party nomination, but gave a rousing speech at the party convention that year.
Our time has come. We must leave racial battleground and come the economic common ground and moral higher ground. America, our time has come. We've come from disgrace to amazing grace. Our time has come. Give me your tithe. Give me your poor, your huddled masses who yearn to breathe free. And come November, there will be a change because our time has come. Thank you and God bless you.
The Democrats lost that election, but Jackson continued his work mainly through the Rainbow Push Coalition in Chicago. He would also occasionally get involved where he thought he could make a difference in downstate Illinois, as well as in Decatur, 1999, when a group of high school students were expelled after a fight in the stands during a football game. And in Springfield, 2017, when Democrats in the General Assembly and Republican Governor Bruce Rauner were going on 2 years without passing a full budget for the state of Illinois. I actually had the chance to speak briefly with Jackson during a rally outside the Capitol building that spring. He was calling for the legislative leaders to get in a room with Rauner to hash out their differences.
This would not be your first attempt at being a peacemaker, a peace broker. How does this situation compare to other experiences?
Well, you simply have to ask for it. We live in a democracy, and if Mr. Cullerton said he'll agree to have such a meeting, I don't see why Mr. Madden would disagree with it. And I get the impression from Goldberg that Ronna will do it. So if the three of them will meet together in the room and close the door, we should stay there until we hammer something out. We need the budget, and we need it for the people of Illinois now.
Jackson had reportedly been dealing with a neurodegenerative disease, progressive supranuclear palsy, although it was originally misdiagnosed as Parkinson's more than a decade ago. His family, in a statement, says he died peacefully this morning. Jesse Jackson was 84 years old. All right, on with the program. Jeannie Evans is an antitrust enforcement lawyer and one of the Republicans running in next month's Senate primary. She was born and raised in Los Angeles County in Southern California. She went to Brigham Young University, but for a year and a half, she paused her studies to serve in Hong Kong as a Christian missionary. Eventually, she went back to Brigham Young and earned an undergraduate degree in political science. From there, she went on to Harvard Law School, where she was executive editor of the Harvard Journal of Law and Public Policy, and also part of the Federalist Society, the conservative legal organization. After earning a law degree, her work as a commercial litigation attorney took her back to California. Then, after a few years away from work life, she returned to being an attorney, this time for a firm in Chicago. She co-founded her own litigation firm, stayed there for a few years before moving to another firm in Chicago where she's now worked for almost 10 years, pursuing lawsuits against the likes of Hyatt, Hilton, Temu, and TikTok. And in the past few months, she's gone on leave from that job as she runs for the U.S. Senate Republican nomination here in Illinois, of course, to fill the seat being vacated by Dick Durbin at the end of his term early next year. Jeannie Evans joins us now for the hour. Welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
And a reminder, early voting is now underway across Illinois. Primary election day itself is March 17th. And listeners, you are welcome to join us today at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, let's start as I do with most candidates. Tell me about your early life growing up in California.
I was born in California. I was blessed with wonderful parents. I had three brothers, had a wonderful childhood. My parents raised us in a Christian home. My parents loved the American government, the American Constitution. They taught me to love the gospel and to love the Constitution and the freedoms that we've been blessed with. My father actually read to me from the Federalist Papers as bedtime stories. He encouraged me to read The Democracy in America by de Tocqueville and Free Market Economic Theory. So I'm very rooted in free markets, free enterprise, freedom of speech from my father. My father hoped that I would grow up to be a constitutional lawyer, and he did inspire me to go to law school. As you said, I went to Harvard Law School and became a lawyer.
Is that a real story? The Federalist Papers? I mean, Madison, Hamilton, yeah. Et cetera?
That is a real story. Yeah. He also gave me books to read, such as The Road to Serfdom by Hayek and Von Mises' Human Action. So he definitely helped frame my worldview and political and economic thinking at a young age.
You know, I mentioned in the introduction you did missionary work in Hong Kong, and I don't know what your current status is or what you're willing to say about, you know, the LDS and your affiliation with the church. But talk about that experience. How did that, you know, affect your outlook on life and the world?
Yeah, so being raised with Christian values is something that's very important to me. I think the main teachings are to love others, to love your neighbor, to love your enemies, to try to work for peace, but also for freedom. You know, part of the Christian worldview is that we're blessed with freedom and the freedom to choose and make good choices. And so to try to choose the right and try to encourage other people to choose the right and choose to obey the commandments of God.
And what about being in Hong Kong? When were you in Hong Kong? Was it still a British protectorate?
I was
that
in
time?
Hong Kong, yeah, from 1991 to 92. So I had started college and then took some time out to be in Hong Kong. And yeah, it was an incredible experience. I love the people in Hong Kong, the many friends that I made and the other missionaries that I worked with. And it was a really great experience to get to know people and get to know when you're talking with someone as a missionary, they're very honest and open about the things that matter to them, about their goals and values, but also their struggles and their pain and the difficulties that they have in their relationships or just struggling to make a living. So I think it was really eye-opening to see the problems that people face. And I had a strong desire to want to help make things better.
So you mentioned going to Harvard Law School. You were part of the Federalist Society there. Talk about that. What was Harvard like for a young, I presume, conservative, legal aspirant at that time?
Yeah, I loved school. I loved the opportunity to go to law school. It seemed like a luxury to be able to study law cases, think about what the law should be, think about the effect of laws on people and their actions and behavior. And I had a desire to make good laws. I was there at the time that Ted Cruz was a third year student. I was a first year student. We were both in the Federalist Society at the same time. So there were some other conservative students who often were part of the Federalist Society or the Journal of Law and Public Policy. But there were a lot of liberal thinkers. That was the predominant view. And so often for a conservative group, it was hard to find a professor who might be able to be the sponsor for that group because most of the faculty leaned to the left. But I did have the experience there where certain professors did allow opportunities for debate. I had Alan Dershowitz for criminal law, and the majority of the students would often express a more liberal view, and Dershowitz would often say, "Okay, Miss Evans, let's hear the other side. Let's hear the conservative side of that." And he'd give me an opportunity to give the conservative perspective on certain issues.
Fascinating. What was Ted Cruz like? I'm sorry, this is not in my plan list of questions, but
He was smart. He was active. He had a leadership role, as I remember. I remember the going to the Federal Society Conference, and he was there. So we didn't know each other that well because I was a first year and he was a third year. So it was only through the Federalist Society that I interacted with him. But he definitely was memorable. I remember that he was a strong already leader and had strong thoughts at that time.
Fascinating. So talk to me about your legal work. So it sounds like, I'm old enough to remember when trial lawyer was one of the worst epithets you could throw around in Republican circles. How do you reconcile what you do with that sort of general or at least old school sort of Republican disdain for, consumer litigation with your chosen career?
Yeah, well, I think what I have been focused on right now, I'm an antitrust lawyer. I sue companies for price fixing. So if we have an industry with a few dominant competitors, there's the opportunity for them. What we want is for them to compete with each other. If they compete, it helps lower prices, it helps increase innovation, it helps increase quality. But what they're tempted to do is to agree with each other to raise prices. So if a few dominant competitors who control the market agree with each other to raise prices, that's bad for American consumers. It raises prices, it makes the cost of living unaffordable. And so we sue them because that is illegal. They're violating the antitrust laws, and we hold them accountable. And that promotes competition in the market, which brings down prices. So I think that is one of the key parts of my experience that I think qualifies me for this moment. So I'm running for United States Senate in a time where one of the important issues on voters' minds in Illinois and around the country is the cost of living. People are struggling to be able to afford a home, to afford to put groceries on the table, and to pay their electric bill. And part of the reason those prices are too high is because of anti-competitive conduct by huge corporations. So I sue them to bring down those prices for consumers and also to level the playing field for small businesses, because the large companies are also tempted to take action that can crush small businesses. And we need small businesses. Small businesses are the growth engine of the economy. They're the jobs of tomorrow. We need to nurture them. We need to strengthen them and help them scale up and grow and create really good jobs for our young people. So I think actually the kind of law I do is perfectly preparing me for what we need to tackle right now in Congress. So there are cases I've brought, but those skills of rooting out anti-competitive conduct, I want to apply to the housing industry, to the energy industry, and to healthcare to remove anti-competitive constructs that are making life unaffordable.
Antitrust, there has been this interesting confluence of, I think it for a long time it had been thought of as sort of a democratic or liberal progressive policy, and there has been this renewed sort of interest among some conservatives, especially in the Senate, people like Josh Hawley, for example, from Missouri, Senator. Talk about where you see antitrust moving in America these days as a sort of broad policy topic then.
Yeah, so we right now have certain companies that have gotten huge. There's a lot of consolidation, big companies acquiring smaller companies forming, hoping to get acquired. And so there's a problem there. We need more competition. We need companies that want to form and grow and become a competitor and take on the major corporations and create more innovation and lower prices in the market. So I think we do need to be vigilant with like the Department of Justice with merger review, making sure that we're not allowing, say if there was a market with two dominant competitors, we don't want to let them merge, because then we've got no competition, and we know it's going to get too expensive. People are not going to be able to afford products, and quality will go down, and innovation will go down. So I think that the Department of Justice is working on this, and the private law firms like mine, Hoggins Berman, do a fantastic job of filling in where the Department of Justice does not have the bandwidth, or you know, they can't take every case. So plaintiffs' firms go out there and find that anti-competitive conduct and address it, and bring down prices for American families. So I think this is definitely what we need right now.
All right, we need to take a break in a couple of minutes. Just before we move on, so I mentioned you spent a good part of your life in California. What brought you to Illinois?
My husband, who got his PhD at Stanford, he then got his first job as a professor at University of Chicago. So we moved out to Chicago for his job, and we raised our family here. So we have four children. They've all attended Chicago Public Schools. And this has been our home since he got his first job. This is where we've raised our family.
Okay. Good job to get you, Chicago. All right. We are talking, let me remind listeners, we are talking today with Jeannie Evans, who is a candidate for United States Senate. She's running in the Republican primary, one of six people seeking the Republican Party nomination to try and fill the vacancy that's going to be created after Dick Durbin has said he is not going to seek a sixth term in the United States Senate. The primary election voting is underway right now. Early voting is in place across most of Illinois. Check your local election authorities. Primary day itself is March 17th. If you want to join us today, the number is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. I'll also mention you can listen to many of the past conversations we have had in this series at our website, which is 21stshow.org. We're going to continue with Republican candidate Jeannie Evans after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Please stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and our guest for the hour today is Jeannie Evans, one of the candidates running to represent Republicans in this year's race for the U.S. Senate in Illinois. Early voting in the primary is now open across the state. Primary election day itself is March 17th. You can join us today at 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. All right, let's talk about policy. On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate the job that immigration enforcement and Border Patrol have done in places like Chicago and Minneapolis?
Well, I think immigration has done a great job across the country, but specifically at the border. I think under the Biden administration, we had millions, you know, the numbers are around 10 million or more, of people crossing illegally into our country. So our immigration laws were not being enforced. We had an open border, so we had chaos. And Trump has taken the bold action to stop that tide, to secure our southern border, and you know, start enforcing the immigration laws. So I think the people of our country are very happy about that. It's something that needed to happen and should have happened years ago. So that's an important thing that I support Trump on and would want to continue to maintain those protections at the of securing the border.
Indeed, the border crossings have really slowed to a trickle. What about in Chicago, though, where there have been clashes, and Minneapolis? You know, there have been people being tear gassed during a Halloween parade in Chicago. There have been a couple of American citizens who were shot to death by immigration agents or Border Patrol agents in Minneapolis. some non-fatal shootings in Chicago. What do you think about how the sort of administration's work has unfolded in that context?
Yeah, any killings, loss of life, injuries are sad and tragic, and we don't want to lose any lives. I think the unfortunate thing is in these two states, the Democratic leadership has taken an oppositional stance with respect to the federal government. So if I were representing United States in the Senate, I would be building cooperation between the local level, the state level, and the federal level. I would be wanting to work with the president. People do want to enforce the immigration laws. People do want to reduce crime in our communities. And our president is offering resources to help. And I think the Democrat leaders should be cooperating with the federal government. So in Minneapolis and Chicago, you have the unfortunate situation where Democrat leaders are telling people to take action to oppose the federal government. ICE, I mean, it's their job to enforce the immigration laws. Those laws were passed by Congress. It's not the right thing for state government to tell federal agents that they shouldn't be enforcing the laws that they're hired to enforce. And they shouldn't be telling citizens to try to stop or stymie federal agents when they're carrying out their legal duties.
What do you think about the fact that agents are wearing masks and not identifying themselves with name tags or even badge numbers?
I would prefer not to have masks. I think that what these agents are doing is dangerous. Law enforcement is dangerous work. And when you have elected officials, Democrat officials and citizen groups following, stalking, taking license plates, calling people to go stand in the middle of law enforcement operations, it's very dangerous. I mean, if you can imagine like a police officer going to arrest a violent criminal, and you had citizens going in and warning that assailant where the police are coming and taking, following them and getting in their way in a very violent, dangerous situation, that puts a lot of people at risk. So accidents have happened, violence has happened. And I think that we need to support law enforcement. Certainly, training is good and providing training and resources is good, but it is important to support our law enforcement officers.
One of the other areas of, I don't want to say disagreement, but friction that's come up in the relation to this is one of the people shot in Minneapolis was named Alex Preddy. He was an ICU nurse at a Veterans Administration hospital there. He was lawfully carrying a concealed weapon. The president, in response to a question, said, "You can't do that. Basically, you shouldn't do that, and you can't do it. You can't have guns." A lot of gun rights groups have taken issue with the way some of the president and some of his allies have sort of characterized Mr. Preddy's legal carrying of a firearm. What do you think about that in terms of gun rights? And maybe you can, if you want to address the idea of it's a good idea to carry a gun to a protest, I think many people would agree it's not. But, beyond that, should there be further restrictions on gun possession, as the president seemed to indicate he was open to?
I support the Second Amendment. I support gun rights. I support lawful carrying. And I'm not aware of restrictions for people who are lawfully carrying that they're not allowed to carry in a protest. So I wouldn't be pushing for that.
Okay. Last thing I want to ask you about in this area is the Trust Act. And this is something a lot of Republicans and conservatives have pointed to as something they identify as a problem spot with how blue states have interacted with federal immigration enforcement. Backers in Illinois say, and I should note that the Trust Act was actually signed by Republican Governor Bruce Rauner here, but backers say it's meant to make it so victims and witnesses of crimes feel like they can come forward without fear of getting deported if they don't have legal status. Would you support federal legislation overriding the Trust Act?
I want to say big picture, I support cooperation between federal and state law enforcement. I support enforcing the immigration laws. So I think we can talk about if there's changes we want to make to the laws. So if we want to increase or decrease the number of people coming in from certain countries, or if we want to increase or decrease the number of highly skilled workers, bright and talented people from around the world, or if we want to increase the number coming in of unskilled workers who can fill certain jobs that are needed, we can have those conversations and we can amend our immigration laws to keep up with what is in, you know, the interests of our country and what people want to do with the immigration laws. But with the laws in place, it is important to enforce those laws. And I don't think there should be situations where the state is refusing to cooperate with the federal government in those efforts. And I think for police as well, they're trained to back each other up. And when someone calls in for assistance, to be there and answer that call. And it should apply to federal law enforcement as well as state law enforcement.
All right, let me remind listeners, we are talking with Jeannie Evans, one of the candidates running to represent Republicans in this year's U.S. Senate race. She's in the Republican primary on March 17th, although early voting is underway now. You can join us today, 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. What do you think of the way, taking on another domestic policy issue, what do you think of the way President Trump has made use of tariffs?
Trump is trying to bring other countries to the table to get fair trade deals. So if other countries are imposing tariffs on the United States, you know, prior to Trump and we did not have reciprocal tariffs, he is wanting to get a better deal, a more equivalent deal for the United States. And in certain ways, he's trying to get certain trade objectives, and he's been using tariffs as a way to do that. And he's had some success doing that. So I understand what, you know, what the goals are, what the tools are. I personally, as an antitrust attorney and someone who is very rooted in free market economics and really believe in the power of the markets to really unleash prosperity and innovation, I think my goal long-term is to lower tariffs, to do it in a way that's fair and that protects American interests, but lower tariffs, I think, is better in the long run. And I think even President Trump is trying to get there. You know, he's using tariffs to bring people to the table to get good deals, but then as those deals are obtained, trying to lower the tariffs so that we can have more free trade. And I support that. I support, lowering the tariffs as we can.
Yeah. I would say the tariffs have come at a pretty steep price, especially for Illinois farmers. Soybean purchases were really cratered last year, especially from China. What should the government do in response to that? Should they, do what some people call a bailout for farmers?
I support free markets, fair markets, and trying to let the markets do that work and figure things out. So there are times where the government needs to get involved because there are certain industries or products where there are national security interests at stake. And we need to make sure that we as a country can provide the things that we need in a world where maybe we don't, at some points, will not want to buy goods from certain adversaries. So I think in some situations, we do need to protect certain capabilities in our country for national security reasons. But for the most part, I think we want to let the market do its work and have as much free trade as we can.
And as we talk about the economy and trade and jobs and employment in America, something that comes up a lot in conversation, it's also mentioned on your campaign website, is, and I'm going to read from it here, enabling workers and businesses to use rather than be replaced by AI. So I want to ask you about what currently we're calling AI, large language models. How do you feel, how have you seen them being integrated into our economy up to this point?
Here, I'm going to answer that question. I just wanted to go back briefly to what you were talking about farmers before, because
Sure.
I also do want to kind of stand up for Illinois farmers. And I think with the markets, we do also want to our farmers to be able to place their products in markets abroad. And so part of, opening up these markets is that there will be more markets for our producers to sell their goods abroad, which will also help our farmers. So, we want to keep farmers in America. We want to be able to grow food here and also to have, an international economic system where they can sell their products abroad and compete internationally. So anyway, going back to your question about AI, could you just say again that the specific
Yeah,
question that you
well, let me actually, since you mentioned it, I mean, but it is Trump's tariffs that are the reason that Illinois farmers were having such a hard time, right? I mean, or do you disagree with that perspective?
Well, I think there, I mean, the international framework and the fact that that we do have markets for them to sell soybeans abroad, it's all part of these, it's all interrelated. So I think he was trying to the president is trying to take action to promote America, to promote America first, including our farmers, and it's working its way out.
Okay, so my question on AI or large language models, I'm just asking about, how it's been, how you feel about how it's been integrated into our economy up until now. One of the things we hear a lot is that the sort of entry level white collar jobs, first year law associates, first year accounting people are going to be some of the first to feel the effects of being replaced by these pieces of software. I wonder how you've seen that playing out at your own firm or in your industry more broadly.
Yeah, I am generally an optimist. I am excited about new technology. I'm excited about the possibilities for new technologies, including AI. I'm excited about what AI can do for us and how it can increase productivity and provide new opportunities. So I think that as AI develops, there will be, as some jobs are replaced, new jobs will develop. It's just like prior technologies. There's a lot of technology in the past that people were afraid of because they thought they would replace jobs, but they just created new jobs around them. So I'm hopeful that that will happen with AI. I do think we want to maintain the leadership of the United States with AI. So we want to continue promoting scientific research and investment and maintain our leadership on the world stage with AI. And then, to the extent certain jobs are replaced, I think it is important for the United States to invest in job retraining, reskilling for the people who are losing their jobs to technology, to that the government can do something to help them learn about the new jobs that are available. So, and some might be in AI, but others are, we have a lot of industries that need more workers. So there's skilled trades like mechanics. I think the Ford Motor Company CEO a little while back said he's got 5,000 jobs that pay over $100,000 that he cannot fill because we don't have mechanics. I've talked to someone who has an HVAC company, says he could hire 1,000 workers. He doesn't have enough HVAC workers. So in some of the trades, electricians, plumbers, construction work, there are jobs that are unfilled. And so I think our economy can adapt to in the education system and job reskilling to train people for the jobs that are opening up so that as people lose certain jobs, other jobs become available.
Briefly, we need to take a break in about a minute and a half here, but how do you think about President, one of your roles as a U.S. Senator would be to advise and confirm the president's cabinet nominees. What do you think of his cabinet selections so far?
The president has really taken some bold steps. He's really worked to disrupt some of the status quo and change up some of the things that we've been doing.
Is that a
So
good thing? I mean, did some of those things need to be changed, like childhood vaccination schedules and cuts to medical research, things like that?
yeah, the majority of people in America voted for President Trump, and one of the reasons is they did want to shake things up. They wanted some things to be different. So in healthcare, for example, the pharmaceutical companies had a lot of power and were steering us toward more pharmaceutical drugs. And I think, the new HHS appointee is working for to build health and nutrition through health through exercise, nutrition, and that is a voice we need. We need to have lots of ways that we're promoting health in different ways and different voices, that we don't want to consolidate all around the same voice, the same method. And so competition, as it's good in industry, it's good in ideas. We want a competitive market for ideas. We want lots of voices weighing in on what's best. So I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, we need to take another break. We'll have more with Republican Senate candidate Jeannie Evans after this. It's the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are continuing today our series of interviews with candidates for their respective party nominations to compete to be the next U.S. Senator from Illinois. Dick Durbin, as you know, is not running for re-election. Today we're talking with Jeannie Evans, who's seeking the Republican nomination. She is an attorney based in Chicago. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. Let's talk a little bit about foreign policy. What do you think about the Trump administration's capture of Venezuela's president last month?
I think the president took an opportunity, a strategic opportunity, to remove a criminal drug lord who was harming his own people and was making things less safe for the United States. He was indicted by the United States and wanted, and he was not the legitimate leader of his country. He had not won the election fairly, and president in the Trump administration went in with a very precise police action to remove that leader, and I think had a successful operation.
What about Greenland? Do you think the U.S. should seek to acquire or potentially even conquer Greenland from Denmark, since they have indicated they are not interested in selling it?
I think the main point about Greenland is that our president is out there trying to protect American interests, thinking about what our national security interests are, where the threats are coming from, and what he needs to do to protect America. And I think he's not looking to have a war with Greenland. He's looking to work with Greenland and Denmark to assure that the United States, as it has had, and it will continue to have opportunities to have military bases and operations in that country to protect our interests. I have confidence that it's being worked out, that the United States is working things out with Greenland and Denmark to assure security for Greenland and the United States. And I don't see any kind of war being necessary or advised.
What do you think about NATO? It seems like the Trump administration really is not a big fan of the North Atlantic Treaty Alliance, the post-World War II order that, you know, brings together America and Canada and many European countries in a mutual defense pact. And really, they seem to kind of be pulling us back from the idea of being a global superpower, right? You have America First, you have MAGA, seeming to think that we should be at most a regional power. What do you think of that strategic direction for the United States?
You know, I think Rubio just spoke about the importance of Europe. He talked about wanting a strong Europe, wanting the European nations to strengthen their economies and build their defense capabilities. So we do want them to be a strong ally. And you know, they have been an ally, and we have had a world order since World War II where there has been relative stability. We haven't had major countries attacking or taking over small countries just because they're more powerful. We've had relative peace in that regard, and we want to continue that, and we want to do that through standing up to power, to aggression from adversaries. So if there's going to be aggression from China or Russia, we do need to stand up. We are holding the line in Ukraine, and we've just sold arms to Taiwan to hold the line against China in Taiwan. And we do want to work with our European allies. And what Trump has been successful in doing is is motivating those European countries to contribute more money to their defense so that it's not all United States dollars that's paying for that defense, but that countries are carrying their weight. And so they are stepping up, they are realizing they need to contribute, and we want them to be strong and contribute. We want to have a united front against against threats from Russia and China and Iran.
There are people, though, who say, you know, if Germany rearming itself, becoming more powerful, potentially even trying to acquire nuclear weapons, if NATO truly does break down, there are good historical reasons that we may not want the Germans to arm themselves, for example. What do you think of that? I mean, people have concerns. There are reasons that NATO has existed and in the way it has for a long time.
I think the major threats right now are the major threat is from China. Russia is also an adversary, Iran, and those are the threats that we are united. I think the NATO countries, including the United States. And so I think it is good for the NATO countries to be prepared to defend themselves from that aggression, including Germany.
All right. This is a question I've asked of just about every Republican I've spoken to in the last few years. President Trump has made this a litmus test for loyalty to him, which is who won the election in 2020 and was it a free and fair election?
You know, we're in 2026. I think I'm really ready to move forward.
I've heard you answer this question before in the candidate forum the other day. The reason I ask this, I know a lot of Republicans want to not talk about it, but Trump has continued to claim the election was rigged. Just within the last few weeks, Tulsi Gabbard, the leader of America's spy agencies, was in Georgia as the government was seizing voting records, saying they're going to reinvestigate this. And Trump himself has said, quote, "The Republicans should say we want to take over. We should take over the voting. The voting in at least many 15 places. The Republicans ought to nationalize the voting." End quote. So this line of questions is as much about the future as it is about the past. So I'm going to ask again, was it a fair election in 2020?
Yeah, I will answer that. But first, because you brought up the future, let's talk about the future. So we do want to have fair elections. We need election integrity. People want to know that the elections are fair and that their votes are counted and they're counted equally and fairly. So I think research, investigation about whether the elections are fair, that is a good thing. That is a fine thing to do. And we want to, you know, promote fair elections so that people can feel good about the result. So, you know, in the past, and I'm not calling for nationalism. I support the federal system we have, where we have 50 states, we have different state laboratories, and the states can manage their elections. I do think there is room for national standards. So I support voter ID. I think the majority of the country, not just Republicans, but the majority of Republicans and Democrats do support voter ID laws so that only people who are authorized to vote are voting. It's a simple common sense answer that can make people feel better about the results of the election. So there's some room for a national standard like that. But I think, according to the law, the elections would be handled at the state level by each state.
Sure. And so what happened in 2020 was that, you say there should be trust, but I mean, it was really President Trump single-handedly or with his allies seeking to undermine trust in that election.
Yeah. So Biden, he prevailed in the election. He served as president. And then in the next election, President Trump was elected and served. And so I support the certification of elections.
Would you have voted on January 6th, or I guess it was the early hours of January 7th, to certify the election results?
Yes.
And what do you think about Trump's pardoning everyone convicted of or even charged with criminal wrongdoing in relation to the attack on the U.S. Capitol building, January 6th, 2021?
I'm a political outsider. I've been focused on my career as attorney, as a mom raising four kids. I was not present for any of those hearings, and I didn't get to see all the evidence. So, what I understand is that there might have been blanket attacks against a lot of Republicans who were present there that might not have been called for. And there are other situations where there was more, conduct against the law. So again, I was not part of all that. I'm trying to move forward. I'm trying to focus on the work we need to do for our country. People right now are struggling with high prices, and I'm going to be working to bring down prices. People are struggling with high crime. I'm going to be working to reduce crime in America. So I live on the south side of Chicago. I've experienced the devastating impact of crime, and I will be supporting efforts to work with law enforcement to increase funding, to increase resources that police can make our community safe. I think that's what the voters want to talk about. They want to talk about making our community safe and prosperous, and bringing down the cost of living.
Okay, so it sounds like no opinion then on President Trump's pardoning everyone convicted of crime on January 6th, 2021.
I'd have to take those one by one to tell you, because they're not, it's not all yes or all no. You know, there are pardons.
Well,
it
was for him. I mean, not to be.
Yeah, but I'm
about
saying
it.
I can't speak to them in a group. Like, if we'd have to take them one by one, like if you want to bring up one specific example, and I'd be happy to, you know, and tell me all the facts. Like,
yeah.
I, you know, I'm a lawyer, so I know that there's always arguments on both sides, right? Like, I'm a lawyer. You can't make a decision until you see all the evidence. So I'd have to see the evidence to give you a reasonable, you know, answer to that. And I just don't feel like I can do that in a general answer regarding multiple cases.
Okay. We're coming to the end of our time together, and I think you know this conversation has been interesting because it's highlighted some of the tensions that Illinois Republicans have to deal with in trying to win in this state that has not elected a Republican statewide since 2014. I guess one of my big picture questions is, why do you think that is? Why do you think Republicans have struggled so much in Illinois since 2014?
I think we just need a great candidate. I think that we need to run the candidate that's going to speak to the people of Illinois. And the message I'm bringing about strengthening our economy, welcoming jobs to our state, is what people want to hear. We have had one-party Democrat rule. And with that, we have seen businesses leave our state. We've seen people leave our state. We've seen friends move to Florida. And we want to make it a place that people want to stay. And we're going to do that by peeling back the crushing regulations, by supporting small businesses, you know, removing some of these compliance rules and shortening up the approvals and the licensing time period so that businesses can actually form, they can hire, they can scale up and succeed and create jobs and opportunities. That's the message that's going to win. Because if you watch the Democrat candidates for U.S. Senate, they're all talking about raising taxes. They're talking about, you know, how they're just going to fight Trump. And they're not talking about solving problems for Americans. So that's what I am talking about. And that's what I think the people of our state want. I think absolutely a Republican win. And I'm going to say my name a couple times so people remember. Jeannie Evans, that's J-E-A-N-N-I-E, Evans, E-V-A-N-S. Jeannie Evans for United States Senate in the March Republican primary. I think I'm the candidate who can bring that message to the state of Illinois and encourage people to get some competition in Illinois. We have too much of one-party rule. We need somebody who's pushing back, against high taxes and high regulations to create more freedom and more prosperity.
Last question. Is there a difference today in your view? I mean, you're someone who came up during the Clinton administration, you were in the Federalist Society at Harvard, been through the Bush administration, McCain's candidacy for the presidency, and now the Trump era. Is there a difference among being Republican, being conservative, and being Trump?
There's a lot of different brands. You know, no two people are the same. And I think probably no two people agree with each other on every issue. But I think there are principles that I grew up on that unite the Republican Party, and they are reducing the size of government and focusing on the individual and free enterprise, free markets, freedom of speech, like giving people the tools to support themselves and chart their course rather than have government providing for them. So I think the Democrat Party is moving too far towards socialism, with even electing avowed socialist Democrat mayors in New York and Seattle. And what we want is not socialism. We want freedom. We want freedom politically, civically, religiously, culturally, and also in the economy.
Jeannie Evans is among the Republicans seeking her party nomination for U.S. Senate. The election is March 17th. Jeannie Evans, thanks for sharing your perspectives with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you so much.
And that is it for us today. You can find other interviews in this series at our website, 21stshow.org. Coming up tomorrow on the program, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker is scheduled to deliver his State of the State address and outline his plans for state taxes and spending, which includes how to deal with the projected $2.2 billion budget gap and repeated attempts at steep funding cuts from the Trump administration in Washington. We will preview the speech on the 21st Show with Illinois Senate President Don Harmon, a Democrat, and Tony McCombie, Republican minority leader in the Illinois House of Representatives. We'll also have analysis from some experts on Illinois state government and politics. That's all coming up tomorrow on the 21st Show, and stay tuned afterwards for a live broadcast of the governor's budget address at noon. That's it for us today. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening.